Hello and welcome to Not Couple Goals, the podcast where we talk about the best and, let's face it, worst of romantic thriller cinema. I'm Allie Nelson, here with my co-host,
Tyler McCarthy, and this episode, we are talking about the 2019 thriller Villains, written and directed by Dan Burke and Robert Olson, starring Micah Monroe, Bill Skarsgård, Jeffrey Donovan, and Kira Sedgwick.
That's right. So if you haven't seen this movie, it's a bit of an indie hidden gem. I think it was, 2019 South by Southwest. So it's likely you maybe haven't seen it, but you should actually go see it and then come back. So you will be spoiler free because we will be spoiling it. This is your spoiler alert.
Okay. Yes. Good mention up top. Yeah, this is definitely an indie movie. This one flew really under the radar despite having some pretty top talent in it. This was like Skarsgård just before playing Pennywise the second time, I think.
I think same year, because it was 2017 the first one came out, right? And then the second one was 2019.
Yeah, but I think this came out before It Chapter 2. So he had a lot of wind at his back. Jeffrey Donovan's worked a lot. Micah Monroe had a big year with It Follows and a lot of stuff. Or that It Follows was what year?
2015. Something Shut like up that. About Jeffrey Donovan.
All right, relax. That's going to come up a lot. I'm a big Burn Notice fan, and he was in Burn Notice for like 7 seasons, I think.
And, yeah, Burn Notice. Here's your guy.
Yeah, I like that show. It's really good. A USA Network original. The network that pays the bills around here. Kira Sedgwick, obviously pretty top tier actress. So it's got a lot of great people behind it. And the script was pretty good. So I was surprised that this flew under the radar so much.
Yeah. But the reason we ended up, cause we watched it, not even for the podcast, we watched it because of a movie that we did watch for the podcast. We watched Significant Other, which yes. Another Micah Monroe movie, but it's from the writer director team, right?
I believe so.
Or is it just one of the writer directors? I think it may just be one of the writer directors. I think it was Dan Berg.
Now I got to do this.
Yeah. See, so, but that was another one that kind of went under the radar. It was on Paramount Plus. It came out last year, and we both really liked it, even though it hasn't gotten the reviews that I think it deserves.
Same duo, by the way.
Okay, same duo.
Yeah, Significant Other. Please, if you're listening too, also go back and listen to that episode because that was a crazy good movie.
Yeah, watch the movie.
Yeah, it was really good, and then we did an episode on it, and it was like very surprising, and that's what put Villains on our radar, was we looked at these filmmakers and we're like who are these guys?
Because we really liked Significant Other.
Yeah, it was so good. That one came out, what year did that come out?
I think that was last year.
Yeah, it was 2022. So they followed
that was 2 years ago, though.
Yeah, they followed this movie up with Significant Other. Significant Other, I would say, is better, but only in the sense that, like, I just feel like these guys got better over time. I feel like I'm going to say that their next movie is going to be better than both Significant Other and Villains.
They're different movies, though. Like, this also has, like, I like a twist, so this also has a twist, but, like, it's, like, a somewhat supernatural movie, like Significant Other is, and this one is more grounded in reality. It's just, like, creepy reality.
It's got some, like, dark comedy to it, too. We're back to Villains, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, but before we get too far down the rabbit hole, let's talk a little bit about what we expected from this movie going into it.
Well, so I think initially I had heard just the name of the movie and seen the cover just a few times, like on different streaming things where I would scroll by. And I guess for some reason I thought it was like a dinner party where two of the people like end up being evil. So I kind of, or like not evil, but maybe like shifty sort of villain people.
I watched the trailer before this and I can see where you can have that read.
Well, not the trailer. It was just even the cover and just the name. So I thought that. And then I read the synopsis and I, you know, then I was like, oh, I guess I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, same deal. We kind of touched down on it. But yeah, I'd never heard of Villains before, sadly, until we watched Significant Other and we just went looking around these creators. And found it. I was obviously excited by Jeffrey Donovan. And but like, you know, I read the synopsis and it reminded me of that movie The Perfect Host starring David Hyde Pierce.
Yeah.
Which has a similar premise. An outlaw goes on the run, conducts a home invasion, but the person who lives in the home he invades is like a worse villain than him. And that's kind of what this movie ends up being.
There's another movie with like Teresa Palmer and Stephen Moyer from True Blood that has like a somewhat similar premise, but I don't remember what that one's
Maybe
called.
We should do all of the like botched home invasion movies or like you've home invaded the wrong person movies.
Yeah. I mean, that one was okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect Host was just okay as well. As much as David Hyde Pierce is like very worth watching. But
yeah,
this I think is the superior of the three that we've discussed, at least botched home invasion movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. But before we get too far into it, Allie, why don't you tell our listeners who either did see this, ignored our spoiler alert, or just need a refresher, what is Villains about?
So Mickey and Jules are our protagonists.
Oh, you're going names. You remembered names.
Yeah, because I liked, they had like, you know, the cute like robber, like, you know, team, yeah, like crime team names. So those are our protagonists. That's Michael Monroe and
Bill Skarsgård. Bill,
Mickey and Jules, they rob a gas station and then they run out of gas. What is the irony? So they see a house it's one of the only houses, I think the only house that's nearby them. And they decide, okay, let's break in there. We'll steal their car, maybe steal their cereal and other stuff inside. And so when they break in, they end up finding a child chained in the basement. And they're like, well, we're, you know, people that will rob a gas station. We're not people that will leave a child like chained in a basement. So they, while they're looking for a way to let her go, they end up being there when the couple that owns the house, Jeffrey Donovan and Kira Sedgwick, come home. And it turns out that they are worse villains than the team that robbed the bank robbery. So they end up, through a little bit of shenanigans, they end up being the prisoners of, what was it, Gloria? And I don't remember the other guys.
George and Gloria.
George and Gloria. Yeah, they end up their prisoners. And this is sort of the story of how they, how that fares for them, which is not always great.
Hey, it's Bill Bodkin, editor-in-chief of ThePopBreak.com. Join myself, Amanda Rivas, Al Manarino, and a cavalcade of awesome guests on the socially distanced podcast, the flagship podcast of ThePopBreak.com.
And it's Amanda Rivas. If you're a pop culture obsessed nerd like we are, then you need to make socially distanced an integral part of your life. We talk all the things, Marvel, Star Wars, you know, everything on Disney Plus pretty much, as well as the hottest trending shows and news in the world of pop culture.
This is definitely Al Manarino and not Bill Bodkin. So listen to the Socially Distanced podcast every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all your favorite podcast platforms. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so we can eventually get Disney Plus to give us advertising money. Please, we could use the money. I have children.
Hello, I'm Daniel Cohen, former film editor of ThePopBreak.com, and I've got a Batman podcast for you. We discuss Batman's past, present, and future, and do a lot of rankings episodes. Yes, we rank the movies, villains, but that's not all. We even rank all the Batman movie trailers throughout history. Yes, we rank Batman trailers. I dare you to find another Batman podcast that did that. So join me and frequent hosts Alex Marcus and Bill Bodkin, as well as a plethora of Bat guests, as we discuss Batman and plenty of DC on film as well. Also, fair warning, I'm a BVS fan, but don't let that scare you away. Trust me, I get mocked and ridiculed more than the Martha line for taking that stance. So relax and tune in on the last Tuesday of every month on the Pop Break Today feed.
Yeah, it is a, it's like, it gets twisted in a hurry, but it's also like, even before it's twisted, it's very stylized. It's this, they're this kind of Bonnie and Clyde couple, but they're a little more like low rent. Their big ambition is to like steal enough money by knocking over gas stations to make it to Florida and then like sell seashells.
Yeah.
Like literally sell seashells at the beach or something like that. Like that's their big life goal.
Which doesn't seem like, I was reading a tweet the other day where somebody was like, that's the worst place she could sell seashells. And yeah. I was like, that's a funny, you know, they were talking about she sells seashells, but yeah, it's also for them because I'll just go get my free seashells exactly. down by the seashore.
They just wanted to harvest seashells and sell them, I guess. And then they thought that they're going to buy a house and all their problems will be solved. So they're a Florida couple, I guess. They're a Florida version of Bonnie and Clyde.
They're a future Floridians.
That's true. They haven't quite made it to Florida yet. But yeah, that's their big ambition. And then they do meet this sort of like similarly twisted couple.
This couple is like twisted. They're like two like young people that like knock over a.
Yeah, they're like doing drugs, getting an adrenaline rush, and
yeah, they just needed some money. They didn't like go rob a bank and like didn't hurt anybody.
They have their weird like thing to focus where she like sits on top of him and like. Drapes her hair down so that all they can see are each other's faces.
And they're not great at robbing the bank either.
No, they were really bad. They didn't make a lot of money and they like stole. Didn't they like just steal chips or something like that? I can't remember.
They did get the money, but like.
It's not a lot.
Well, also like I remember they were like very like. They like, you know, were having some issues getting the cash register open and they ended up having to like swipe something and then but like it took them a long time to figure out how to get the cash register. Like they were very goofy about it.
And they're in these crazy masks that they also probably very clearly stole. They had, I think, one gun between them, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Which, I mean, I guess that's the American dream. One gun and a dream. You can get across country and build your life together, I guess.
Yeah.
But so they did all of this weird. The hair thing was weird for me. I like that they sort of had their unique thing, but they like dwelt on it for quite a while. It was like a lot of close ups of Bill Skarsgård's face and her face with like her hair draped down. It was weird. That thing was weird. But I guess they're kind of a weird couple. They do weird things. Like they eat cereal. The first thing they do when they break into the house is they start eating cereal.
She does, but he's a little like, why are you eating their cereal?
He's a little more mission focused. And yeah, they can't for the life of them find just the fucking keys to the car.
Yeah, I did like...
They could have Googled how to like hotwire a car in the time it took them to turn over the place looking for car keys.
I did like the little hint of like the fact that the couple was creepy when they're just going through their stuff and they like look in their video camera and they just like watch for like a second, but then they still leave it running when they walk away from it and you see like that there's a couple that's tied up.
Yeah.
And then one of them walks over with a knife and that's creepy. Like it's like, oh, okay, that these people are filming themselves like torturing people that they kidnap.
And then I do love the moment where they come home and it is very like they've got the power dynamic in this movie shifts a lot too, which is also really fun to play with. They come home and what are their names again? Mickey and
Jules.
Mickey and Jules. They've got the upper hand because they've got the gun and they're calling the shots. And Jeffrey Donovan doing his best, like, Southern gentleman character is like, oh, I used to be a salesman, so I'm really good at reading people. And he, like, reads them out their situation. Like, you guys are on the lam. You know, forget about the girl you saw in the basement. Just take our car and, you know, we'll call it a day. And then because he's got the gun, Bill Skarsgård can be a little snarky and he's like, oh, I can read people too. And it's not until they try to rescue the kid. And I didn't get the kid. She bites him. And I'm like, what is this girl's relation to this old couple?
Well, I think she had been kidnapped by them at a very young age. So all she knew was like being like chained in the basement by them.
Oh, I don't know why I assumed the kidnapping was like somewhat recent.
I don't think it was supposed to be recent.
Oh no, that's horrible.
So, and like it comes out like she's been kidnapped and like they killed her parents and everything because they couldn't have children of their own. But then Kira Sedgwick didn't like having her around because it just reminded her that they couldn't have children. And as like a compromise, instead of killing her like Kira Sedgwick wanted, Jeffrey Donovan just like chains her in the basement. They have like a wagon and like toys for her and stuff.
That's his like humane thing that he does. That's him being a nice guy.
So then she bites Mickey, causing him to like drop the gun and he gets like knocked out by George.
Yep.
And then they both get tied up to a pole, which is not great for them.
And then he wakes up in a very strange situation that I also didn't get. Oh, it seemed like Kira Sedgwick's thing was that she really wanted to be a mother, but also kind of a burlesque dancer. Like what was
she
that?
She wanted to be wanted by him. So she like tried to seduce him and then she got mad that he didn't get an erection.
Right. But why did she want to seduce him?
I think, because she's, you know, she's twisted. So I think she just like,
I guess that'll explain a lot of the behavior in this movie is they're fucking twisted.
Well, yeah, I think she was like, oh, I think they had like a swinger aspect to them. And she was like, oh, there's this like young, sexy guy. I can like seduce him and see if I give him like a boner. And then she's like, because she wanted to feel attractive and like, you know, you're doing your sexy dance in your best like outfit for like best sexy lingerie outfit for him. And then he doesn't get an erection. That's insulting.
Yeah, I guess. I guess it's a little, well, I was going to say it's a little hard to get an erection when you're tied to a bed, but that's not necessarily true. More tied to the bed in this context.
Yeah, tied to the bed when you didn't pick out a safe word beforehand and decide and consent to being tied to the bed.
And when your her husband knocked you out. The last thing you remember is her husband knocking you out while you were trying to rescue their other kidnapped victim.
Yeah.
But that, and that was like one of the, I think that was the most surreal, strange part of the movie is waking up in that sort of twisted seduction web. The rest of the movie plays out pretty straightforward.
Well, it turns out that like the baby they thought she had was actually a doll.
Yeah,
that was pretty surreal. So she treats
that was
the doll
pretty obvious. That felt very like,
but she treats
couple.
But she treats the doll like it's her actual child. So when Micah Monroe finds it, she is pretty horrified. Like, oh, this is just a fucking doll.
Yeah, but she's still smart enough to like use it as leverage. But were you ever fooled for a second that that was a real baby?
No, I was pretty sure not, because it didn't make any noise or move.
Well, and they both seem too old to have a newborn, right? Or am I misreading the ages there?
I would have just assumed that they could have kidnapped it, because it was clearly the girl in the basement was kidnapped.
Let's talk about the little, well, no, I guess that's getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but there is like a really like, not infuriating, but a part of this movie that really did make me like sigh, which is when Bill Skarsgård has talked his way into getting released.
Yeah.
And Micah Monroe just totally screws up the situation.
Because she gets, I hated the sequence where they realized that they could pick the lock with her tongue stud. And so they had to like rip it out of her tongue. And that was horrifying to me.
That's the most overtly like horror Texas Chainsaw Massacre-y like mutilating thing there is in this movie. Like, I know Bill Skarsgård gets shot for trying to escape and tricking Kira Sedgwick into thinking she was seducing him. He gets shot in the leg, but that's, you know, par for the course. It's the horror of like basement mutilation kind of stuff. Yeah,
it just seems so painful. And then so then she manages to pick one of the locks, but then it breaks when she's trying to pick his. And then the kid like clearly likes Micah Monroe because she's been nicer to her, whereas like she's like,
she doesn't want to bite her.
She's kind of wary of Bill, which I get. Like, if you're a kid, you're you know, I get, you're a little girl, you're gonna like trust the girl a lot, like the woman a lot more. And then also she spends a lot of time trying to like talk to her and be nice to her, and she's kind of more understanding that she's traumatized. So then the little girl does like point towards the laundry chute, which like she does like very like athletically like get her way up it, which it would be hard to, you know, kind of like push yourself to the sides and like really like claw your way up the way that she does.
Yeah, I don't know if I could like, I guess I'll call it like a pressure climb. I'm sure parkour enthusiasts have a term for it, but like where you just sort of shimmy yourself up and by putting pressure on the walls, that seems really difficult.
Yeah, I think I could do it, but I don't think I would do it as fast as she did.
Or
like,
as
I think
quietly.
It would be hard. Yeah, I think it would be very hard to do.
And she gets all the way up to the second floor, right?
Yeah, because she ends up there, and that's when she ends up in like the baby's room and then finds that it's a doll. So I didn't really blame her. Like, during this time, because she's gone, they discover she's gone, and Bill Skarsgård comes out with like a good story. I liked that he was like, oh, she's already gone. Like, she's going to meet me later on at our, like, specific meeting place. But if I don't get there, she's calling the police. And so you better let me go.
Which is a really great little caper that one would maybe find in an episode of Burn Notice. It's the exact kind of shit he would have played.
Moving on.
I did like that Bill Skarsgård does, he oscillates believably between being a total rube and being like the kind of clever they need to get out of this situation.
They should have discussed beforehand, hey, if they come down, this is what I'm going to say to them. Then that would have been established, you know, like that way you have like your safety story. So like when she mishears the conversation and thinks like, kind of rightfully so,
that he's about to be executed, right?
Yeah, and that's why she comes out with the doll and like threatens to drop it if they kill him. Meanwhile, they were really going to let him go. And that is like an oh no sort of moment, but like I didn't blame her.
No, you can't blame her, even though it's like her fault. But like, yeah, she was making the right play, or so she thought. But she, I guess she just underestimated her boyfriend, because he was. I mean, he talked him into just straight up letting him go. Like that's huge.
Yeah,
he should be proud of himself that it almost worked that well. And then she does end up dropping the baby, or the
that's because Kira Sedgwick shoots at her.
Yeah, she goes nuts and just snatches the gun and unloads.
And it's Kira Sedgwick's fault that the baby, the weird doll baby thing, gets smashed.
Yep.
Like, she gets really angry that it happens, but it's like, hey, lady, if you hadn't shot at her, like, you could have just let them both go and it'd have been fine.
You would be a terrible mother. Someone has your baby that you don't like, so you just open fire on them?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if someone's trying to trade your baby as the hostage, even if it's a doll or what, like, just trade. All they wanted to do was leave. I mean, granted, they were going to call the police, but, like, you didn't want to have the kid anyway. So, like, that's all fine.
And, you know, Allie and I don't have kids. We're not parents. But I will say, I think dad instincts, if someone's holding your baby, don't shoot that person.
Yeah.
Don't even shoot at that person. That's just parental safety.
Unless you're like a sharpshooter like Andy Garcia in The Untouchables, in which case maybe you try.
But then doesn't the baby just drop?
I think it depends on the situation.
Like, okay, if they're standing on a bed, no, maybe like, try to take the shot.
No, but if I need to take the shot, I'm saying. If I'm Andy Garcia in The Untouchables level of shooting, and I need to take the shot because it's going to get us out of the bad situation, maybe I'm going to try
but
and take the shot.
Don't drop your baby.
I'm saying, maybe there's a reason that that's the better idea. That's all I'm saying.
That's
like, maybe I can, like, in The Untouchables.
Allie's covering all of her bases.
So, spoiler alert for The Untouchables. In The Untouchables, he does his little, like, cool move where he slides under the baby carriage and saves the baby carriage and the baby subsequently, and then also takes the shot. Maybe if you're Andy Garcia in The Untouchables, you can slide under, catch the baby, and take the shot.
Well, you caught the stroller, right? Not the baby.
I know, but I'm saying maybe in
you're
this scenario.
So you refuse to say blanket statement, don't shoot someone who's holding your baby.
I'm saying if you think that, listen, like, don't let them leave with your baby. That's not a good thing.
Neither is letting your baby fall from a standing height.
No, so I'm saying if you're able to Andy Garcia style.
Stop saying Andy Garcia. I won't say Jeffrey Donovan. I won't bring up Burn Notice anymore if you don't bring up Andy Garcia.
No, but everyone should see The Untouchables.
Yeah, it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
A lot of people have seen The Untouchables. I don't think it's like I don't think it's as underrated as maybe Villains.
No, I mean, I think it won Best Picture.
Yeah.
And
should we just pivot this episode to the Untouchables podcast?
I'll talk about The Untouchables any day of the week.
Who played Capone in that again? It's not De Niro, right?
Yeah, Robert De Niro.
Oh, it is De Niro.
He's
in makeup and shit. It's hard to tell.
It's Robert De Niro.
Sorry. I think in my head I'm picturing like the actual photo of Capone and I'm getting confused. Back to villains. So they're both like surprisingly clever when they need to be. You do think you're watching the opening scene where they're like
bumbling
to pull off a gas station robbery. You do think you're just dealing with a couple of rubes, and they don't do much to like make you think otherwise. Their cleverest moment after that is when they break into the house, and then they can't figure out what to do, so they just sit around and they do some drugs, and then he figures out like, oh, we can siphon gas. So like they're smart when they need to be, and a lot of their intelligence comes from drugs, it seems. But
yeah,
it did make them somewhat formidable, because their disadvantage is that they can be bumbling, but the older couple's disadvantage is that they are
crazy.
Cuckoo.
Yeah,
they are cuckoo bananas.
Well, and also like they were too trusting of the other couple, which I think is because like they weren't
the younger couple.
Yeah,
were too trusting?
Mickey and Jules. I think we're too trusting of the other couple, and I think it was like because they themselves weren't murderers. Like, I think they were like, oh, like, we're criminals, but we're not murderers. So, like, you know, they don't want to murder us. And it's like, no, I'm pretty sure they want to murder you.
Yeah. Jeffrey Donovan shoots him in the leg, it is like, it's another moment where, like, the entire power dynamic changes. So now Bill Skarsgård isn't like a physical match for Jeffrey Donovan. Not that he really was to begin with.
But, he's kind of a lanky man.
Yeah, but like the odds of him getting the gun or running away or something like that really diminish. And that's, this movie does a lot. It does a lot with sort of like spending and trading that currency of like the power dynamic in this hostage situation. Which I think makes it like a pretty good movie.
Yeah, and everyone was really good in the movie, which was enjoyable to watch. Like, I like Micah Monroe in the movies I've seen her in, which has been like, nobody was good in the Independence Day sequel, so I don't blame her for the fact that yeah, she took over from Mae Whitman, which everyone was pretty mad about, not because of Micah Monroe, but because, like,
Mae Whitman's around.
Yeah, exactly. Mae Whitman is, like, a famous actress, and, like, she grew up attractive still. Like, there's no reason to replace her with, like, a skinny blonde actress. Like, she's an attractive woman. Like, Mae Whitman's a cute, attractive woman.
I know
woman.
She played Anne on Arrested Development, but that was, she was dressing down.
But if you've ever watched, like, the movie The Duff, which I actually, like, really like, she's very pretty in that.
You really like that movie? I thought your opinion was that movie was, like, mid, but I could be confused.
No, I really like that movie. That's a good one? I've watched it several times. I own that movie. That's how much I like that movie.
You own it? What, on Apple?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Duff. What does it stand for again?
I think it was, like, the dumpy, ugly, fat friend.
Mean. Very mean.
Yeah.
But no, I love Mae Whitman. I think she's great. I first saw her in, what was that? It was, like, some ABC Family show. I don't know if it was an ABC Family original, but it was, like, Saving Grace, and it was her and, actress who played maybe Aaliyah Charcot, I think is how you pronounce her name.
Charcot?
Whatever.
Charcot.
She's a fan. She'll let us know. But yeah, so I've known her since she was, or known of her since she was a little kid actress, and she's great, and she would have been great in the Independence Day sequel. I can't believe I didn't even remember Micah Monroe was in the Independence Day sequel. I don't remember anything or anyone from that movie. It was just so...
Yeah, she was like a controversial casting. So, like, I'll put that one aside. But I really like, I love It Follows just as a movie. I think it's a great movie. I think she's really good in it. I think she was great in Significant Other.
Carrie's Significant Other in many ways.
Yeah, she has a great performance in that. And then she was really good in this. I think, like, that she played a different type of character than you usually see her play. And she was very sort of, like, hippie, but also, like, out there.
Yeah.
Very fun. And then every time I see Bill Skarsgård in anything, I think he does a great job.
They're not quite Bonnie and... What's the more contemporary Bonnie and Clyde reference? A little more rock and roll, a little more heavy metal.
Well, everyone always talks about, like, Mickey and Mallory from Natural Born Killers, but they're definitely not that, because Natural Born Killers is, like, they're, like, serial killers. So they're
inspired by that kind of criminal life on the run couple.
Yeah, I also kind of wondered if that's where the name Mickey came from.
Oh, yeah. I'll bet it is. Well, because that movie comes up a lot in the trivia of the inception of this movie, or conception of this movie, rather.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually haven't seen that movie.
Oh, I mean, it's good. It's
a hard watch.
No, because here's the thing. So this is now going to be, we've talked about a lot of other movies in this.
We're zigzagging. We're all over the road here.
So this was one of the scripts that, like, Quentin Tarantino sold, but didn't get to, like, do himself.
Right.
And his original, so it was done by Oliver Stone, who was taking, like, admitted to taking, like, so much shrooms when he was making this movie. And so he cast, like, Juliette Lewis and, like, Woody Harrelson as these characters. So, like, one of my acting teachers, shout out to Jeffrey Horn, he talked about how, like, you see those two and you're like, oh, obviously they're serial killers. But he actually was the person that first told me, like, initially in the conception of it, it was supposed to be as if, like, the most unassuming couple next door that lived down the block, like, you know, the sweet, like, white picket fence couple, they became serial killers.
Sort of like the couple in Villains.
Yeah, a little bit, but, like, more so, like, just this, you don't expect this couple to be serial killers. And that's so much more interesting. So to just take it and just be like, yeah, these two, they're serial killers, and they're doing serial killer stuff, like, that's not as interesting as, like, and, like, you've kind of seen that, versus, like, the idea that Quentin Tarantino had, I think, is much more interesting, and I wish I would have been able to see that on screen, versus, like, let me just do the really obvious thing. So that's my problem with Natural Born Killers. However, it's, like, an interesting enough... I've only seen it once. And you do get Robert Downey Jr. playing an Australian journalist, and, like, kind of a sleazy sort of hard copy journalist. So that's, like, one of the funner parts of the movie, too. I love Robert Downey Jr.
And I think, like we were saying, this movie gets gets at that concept a little bit. I think one of the reasons we're having trouble staying on topic with this movie is because while it is well done, while it is a fun watch, plot-wise, there's just not a lot of meat on the bone. It's the shift, it's like the power dynamics continue to shift until it comes to a head in the climax, and you know,
I did get annoyed at the two of them, like, because like after she accidentally thwarts their own escape attempt, they get duct taped to chairs, and then Jeffrey Donovan tells them, like, hey, we're not going to kill you. Like, you can relax. We're just going to give you some drugs to knock you out, and then we're going to use that time to leave. And so they're like, ah, yeah, okay. And then they eat the food that's, like, presented to them. Meanwhile, the other two aren't eating it, yep. Which is always your sign to not eat the food.
Like, always make your captor eat the food.
Yeah. Also, don't trust them. That's where I got annoyed with them, because it was like, don't trust them because they said they're not going to kill you and eat and like start eating the food. So then they pass out because the couple took the drugs from their own stash and like drugged them.
They don't make a compelling enough case for like why they wouldn't kill them, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
They're like, we just don't feel like dealing with the body, so instead we're gonna uproot our lives and go on the run. And it's like that don't pass the smell test. Don't eat their food.
Exactly. So I was annoyed by how trusting they were by that point, because it was like they've kidnapped a child, like they've shot you, they've tried to seduce you and gotten mad that you didn't want to have sex with them. Well, I mean, just the lady, because I think if it had been the guy, it would have changed the movie. Although, you know, all things equal, it's creepy either way.
That's true, but you're right. It would have been a much more upsetting movie if it wasn't.
Yeah.
Which we should all maybe think about what that means for our perception as audiences and a society, that the forced physical intimacy on a man from an older lady as attractive as Kira Sedgwick is less upsetting.
Yeah, I did appreciate that, like, he just, like, plays along for, like, a hot second and then, or not such a hot second, he plays along for a moment and just enough to, like, get the drop on her and then, like, fights her off. But the fact that they trusted them and then they reveal as they're passing out, like, oh, we're actually just gonna say that you're a couple of, like, drug addicts that broke in and like overdosed while, which is
such a cleaner story,
overdosed while you were trying to rob us. That's such a, I mean, what kind of bad robbers would like be like, okay, mid robbery, let's take these drugs.
Well, to be fair, that's exactly what they did. They just did an overdose mid robbery, mid home invasion, in order to like help them think about what they should do. They stopped, and I think they did like cocaine, and that's where Bill Skarsgård came up with,
yeah,
we'll siphon their gas.
I guess I was thinking more like if they were home and you did drugs and, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So I guess, like, their plan was to say we found them, because it would be stupid for people to, like, be like, hold on while I'm holding you at gunpoint. I'm going to do enough drugs to overdose myself. And
you wouldn't look into it that much, would you?
I guess not. But then
their plans are thwarted by the arrival. And this was one of the most tense moments, was by the arrival of a cop who was chasing them down for their botched store robbery. Or the bumbling store robbery, recognized their car, and then was just checking on the nearest house, like the first house within walking distance. And not only did that force them to have to like quickly hide their unconscious bodies and tidy up the house and everything, but I imagine it kind of shot there like, oh, we just came home and there was a couple OD'd in our place. It kind of shoots that plan in the foot. They can't exactly sell that anymore, can they?
Yeah.
But luckily, they leave them alone in a room with their bag of cocaine. So their whatever knockout drugs they were given, they were able to counterbalance with a bit of cocaine.
I didn't buy, and I know that it's a movie, blah, blah, but I didn't buy that in the time that Kira Sedgwick had alone with the two of them knocked out and duct taped to the chairs, that she would have had enough time to unduct tape them and move them both to a separate room, you know, by herself.
But I did appreciate that, like, it's very unbelievable that she was able to do all that. But I did appreciate that when Jeffrey Donovan brings the cop into the room and he sees the room clear, he kind of has a look on his face like he's like impressed with his wife.
Yeah.
He's like, God damn, like, Coach Gloria. I thought that was like, it counteracted the unbelievableness of the scene for me. It's still unbelievable, but it made me laugh.
So yeah.
I was fine with it. It is a darkly comedic movie. There are many like funny beats to it. And I think a lot of those are Jeffrey Donovan being like friendly menacing. I'm not sure what the term would be.
Oh goodness, just be the number one person in his fan club.
Fine. Talk about what's his name again from Untouchables?
Andy Garcia. Listen, Andy Garcia and the Untouchables is really cool.
What about Ocean's 11?
He's actually really good in those movies.
What about Ocean's 12?
No, I mean he's like a solidly good performance.
Okay, let's move on. I'm not actually asking you about Andy Garcia.
You did. You asked me about three Andy Garcia performances.
Well, what were your thoughts on Jeffrey Donovan in this movie?
No, I thought he
did. As not a Burn Notice fan, you're grading him in a vacuum. How was Jeffrey Donovan's villain in this movie?
Not a vacuum. I saw him in Blair Witch, Book of Shadows.
Okay, we don't talk about that.
Or what is it? Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. And I've not forgiven him. We do not forgive people that were involved in Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2.
Yeah, is it a fun hate watch?
No. Like, it's just not, it's like.
Yeah, it just never achieved.
It just never, it never lets you in. So when like a twist happens, you're like, but there's no indication that that would have been what was happening. I've heard tell from the cast that there's a good movie within it that was like made and then studio interference or whatever. It's hard to say.
Did the studio interfere by making them film a bunch of really dumb scenes?
That's what I mean, like, it's hard to see where the good movie would have been.
Well, what about Jeffrey Donovan in Villains? Oh, he also had, I think, a good role in Fargo season 2. But what about Jeffrey Donovan in Villains?
Yeah, no, he was good in it, definitely.
I think he carries a lot of the scenes. He's like the most, he's the most like physically imposing and scary. Kira Sedgwick is scary, but she's like crazy and she's all about the, like, the only time she does anything violent is when she's shooting at the Malik Monroe, who's carrying the baby, which you don't have a problem with. You think that's a great move. Andy Garcia is the best. So it's really him carrying all of the scares in this movie, all of the tension, all of the physical fear.
I do think that the couple, like that Mickey and Jules, Bill Skarsgård and Micah Monroe, carry the movie for me.
Really?
Yeah, I thought that they both gave, because I think you need to be on the journey with them in order to enjoy the movie. And I did, I think they're both talented actors, and I think that they were both like, they were as relatable as you could be to two people who are likely in a scenario that you don't find, like, I've never robbed a gas station or been a drug dealer or, you know, God willing, been kidnapped by a creepy couple that I initially was trying to rob. But I feel like they were so good and like grounded and, but still like outlandish at times and like fun and like gave like kind of full performances where you felt these characters were very full people. And I thought that like, you know, you were rooting for them to get through everything. If they weren't good, you wouldn't be rooting for them the whole movie.
Yeah, that's true. They are our protagonists, but I guess for a movie titled Villains, I guess I was drawn to the core villain in the end.
Yeah, I guess, going back to what we expected, there was a part of me, because the movie's called Villains, I sort of expected everybody in it to be their own kind of villain. And I suppose that was maybe the intention, was like, these two people are bank robbers, they're criminals, they sell drugs, like, these are not your typical heroes, they're kind of their own, they were coming in to rob these people and like steal their house, like
bank
steal a car.
Robber feels like such a generous term.
Oh, not bank robber, like gas station robbers. Yeah. They were like small time criminals but also drug dealers, and like, you know, so they were sort of villains in their own right, because they were going to steal these people's car and all of that. They had no qualms about breaking into the house. And then they encounter like real villains, but I kind of assume, I thought that it was going to be more of like a everybody's a villain sort of standoff like situation, and that was definitely not the case.
I'd like to see that movie where you just think of different villainous archetypes and give them a reason to encounter each other like that. That would be pretty cool. But no, Jeffrey Donovan was just a straight across the plate bad guy. One thing I did like about both him and Kira Sedgwick have moments in the movie where they clearly live in like a fantasy world. They live in like an old timey movie where they're good people, they're parents.
They're dressed in like the 1950s.
Yes.
Like their house is styled 1950s.
And they've clearly got money somehow. You don't know how, but like they live in kind of a fantasy world. But there are moments in this very like real life situation where both of them are forced to sort of drop that facade a little bit. And I thought that I thought those moments carried the movie for me a little bit, because it shows it shows that they have a grip on what they're doing, which I think makes them a little scarier.
Yeah.
It's one thing when she's like dancing in lingerie and you don't know quite where she's coming from and all of that, and she's a wild card. But I don't think I would want to watch a movie that was just people being a wild card at all times. Then it's just Joker and that's no good.
Yeah.
Whereas I think them having those moments where they drop the facade and get like, especially him, gets like real life logistical about it, is scary. Like the moment he shoots him too, when he's just like, "You upset my wife," bang. And that's what does it. I think that's the glue that holds the movie together.
See, one of my, like, I liked at the beginning when George does go through like, well, here, you know, I'm good at reading people, and does that whole thing. I liked how sarcastic like Bill Sarsgaard was in back, where he was like, "That's a neat trick. Like, let me see if I can do it too." And then he does his reading, and his reading's pretty spot on too, yeah. Where he's like, "You clearly have a girl kidnapped, like in the basement. I don't think you're going to call the police on us stealing your car. Like, so I think you may as well just let us have the girl. We leave," you know, like that whole situation.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that he also had like a pretty good read on the situation. He just didn't know how like evil those like and creepy and far those people were willing to go.
Yeah. Well, and in the end, I guess if I were Bill Skarsgård, I wouldn't have told them, well, you've got the gun, so you think you've got the upper hand. But I forget, he told them like, "Well, you're going to have the time it takes us to find a cop to like go on the run and avoid this." And that was the deal he was offering Jeffrey Donovan, which was, you know, kind of good. It was interesting to circle back to the end when they get drugged too, where both of them are like, they have no intention of going on the run. They're going to say these two junkies came into their house, OD'd. That's the end of it. But then when they escape, they both do the bump of cocaine and they make it look like they went out the window. These two, like, you know, villains, this was another moment where the facade kind of dropped for them a little bit. Had to be like, okay, I guess it's 5 p.m. and I guess tonight's the night we pack everything and never return to our home and we go on the run forever. Like, that's...
And they get into a fight in the woods, like an argument.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, and you see kind of the dysfunction, but the codependency of their relationship too, which is like also scary. We'll get into it in the trivia a little bit, but it's an important scene for like the movie that the writers wanted to make.
The real hero of this villain's movie may just be cocaine.
That's true, actually.
Because they're knocked out and then Micah Monroe kind of comes to, but not fully. And she realizes she can go do a bump of cocaine and get like her, you know, adrenaline going.
Yeah.
And then she gives him cocaine. And that's
I've never seen a movie where someone had to be like force-fed cocaine. Have you?
Not that I could think of. I'm sure.
Where she's like, "Snort it, please." But yeah, I mean, I've not done a lot of cocaine, so I don't know. Does it work like the adrenaline shot from Pulp Fiction?
I would imagine. I mean, okay, no. Here's the don't mix so many drugs, because that is how you actually would probably have a heart attack. Because they were already like on so many downers that then mixing an upper can actually cause heart attacks. That's why some people were having heart attacks when they did too many vodka Red Bulls.
Oh, yeah.
So a vodka Red Bull can do it. Then I imagine doing a lot of
cocaine and a knockout drug would probably have a similar, if not more powerful effect.
However, I suppose if your body is so used to doing drugs and you're in this very specific situation, where you needed to get your adrenaline going and you don't have an EpiPen, or just a shot of pure adrenaline, which I think is just the same as epinephrine. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, I guess in this specific occasion, they needed to do the cocaine. It was either that or just be knocked out and get killed.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the ending a little bit. So they open the window, they make it look like they've escaped out the window and fucked off into the woods, but they were smart. They hung back, tricking the couple into going outside so that they could take their car. And then they open the garage door, and unfortunately
they get the little girl.
Oh, right. Yeah, they get the little girl.
Who's willing to come with them this time.
Reluctantly, but she takes some coaxing, some valuable time.
I thought you were saying, for a second, it sounded like you were about to say she takes some coke.
Yeah, they
said
the,
it in a weird way.
They give the little girl some Coke.
No, you said
just
Coke.
Just for sharing.
You said she takes some Coke thing in a weird way. Like, some you had, coking. Like, yeah. No, she's
been coked.
She, by this point, she's like realized that she likes them better.
Yeah. And they open the garage door, and this is like the scary moment. Jeffrey Donovan's standing there, and he's like pure no facade, any of this anymore. Like, he's purely just like, get out of my car.
He's got a gun.
I will shoot you. Yeah. And Bill Skarsgård like takes his shot, and he tells them both to duck, and he just drives the car into Jeffrey Donovan, but gets fatally wounded in the process, which was
shot.
Really sad. Yeah.
You know, here. Okay. At this point, the movie, I got angry at the movie.
Oh, really?
Because wow. I think I even multiple times said out loud to you, like, and then you duck too. Like, you can hit the gas and go forward and also be ducking. We've seen people do it in many movies.
Yeah, that's true.
So why couldn't he also duck and just hit the gas? Duck, hit the gas, and hit him with the car, and then you also would not have gotten shot, most likely.
Most likely. It is hard to duck when your passenger is also ducking, I imagine.
You duck on top of each other.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he could have ducked a little bit, but he didn't, and he got...
Crouched down, I don't know. Like,
shot twice? Three times? How many times did he get shot?
He got
twice.
Shot a decent
enough
amount.
Enough to kill him. And it was sad, because then you have to see two really, like, tragic deaths. You see Bill Skarsgård die, and you see Malik Monroe react to that, and they do. They were like in love. They traveled across the country together. They were had big plans to sell seashells down by the seashore in Florida and all that. And you watch her react to losing him and all of that, and it's very sad. But then the little girl ends up shooting Jeffrey Donovan in the face.
Because he's trying to kill Michael Monroe.
Yeah. Killing him. And then you have Kira Sedgwick come and in my opinion, completely upstage Malik Monroe by doing Micah Monroe by doing an even more like kind of like heartbreaking performance, because she's twisted. She's like, oh no, she's like full denial. She's like, he's just resting. He's going to get up. He's going to be fine. And his face is like half gone.
I mean, and they end up like leaving her. I was very much like, I am against murder in life, but in movies, I think shoot her. Cause you don't know if she's going to hurt somebody else. Mm. She seems like she has it in her to hurt somebody. She was willing to kill a child that she decided she didn't want, you know?
Yeah, like, I pitied her, though. I felt like... I don't feel like she's getting away with... Like, I don't know. I don't feel like she's going to explain to the police in any coherent way.
I don't know.
That's going to let her, like, live through this, or at least not go to prison or something like that. But maybe you're right. She does seem like she has the potential to harm someone again. Because, you know, we keep talking about that facade. Maybe it would come back up as soon as the police come and she starts getting questioned. But in that moment, she is just a fully gone lunatic that is worthy of your pity. Well,
and then the two of them go off to sell seashells at the seashore. And I think they name it at the little seashell shack. They name it
the
after.
Seashell shack by the seashore.
Yeah, I think they name it after
Why did you
him.
Stumble on that?
I think they name it. Mickey's or something.
Mickey Seashell Shack by the Seashore?
No, they don't name it that.
You're not impressed at all at how I'm doing this?
No, but I didn't find this such the happy ending where like they're like running on the beach and like holding hands. I keep being like that, even if her parents are dead, that little girl might have like an aunt or uncle or like
That's true. You can't just adopt this found girl.
Yeah, there might be people that are like looking for her or would care about her. And like, you at least should let them know she's okay.
Yeah, it's a weird ending. It's a really weird ending.
Like, the police may be wasting resources looking for her.
Yeah, like she wanted to like be this like Bonnie and Clyde couple who like finally makes it to Florida, escapes all their enemies and all of that. And instead she ends up being like a 20-year-old mother or something like that.
Yeah.
To a like 6-year-old or something like that. It's a very strange ending.
Yeah.
A mute 6-year-old.
She's not mute, I don't think. I just don't think she would talk.
Yeah. They probably didn't give her a lot of like speech if she was.
Well, also she was so traumatized and scared of them.
Well, yeah.
So, I like, it's like a happy ending in that, like, they seem happy together. And they seem to be making good money within the sea shack.
Which is crazy to me.
Yeah. But with a can-do attitude and a full heart, you can't lose.
That's true. And that's the moral of this movie.
Yeah.
Well, we covered pretty much the whole plot. So now I'm curious what your favorite scene from the movie was. Or what the best, just most memorable scene for you was from villains?
I did like the beginning. Like, I like a good bumbling robbery. I think that's always fun to watch.
That's fun, yeah.
But I do think my favorite was the scene, I mentioned it about a little while ago, where you get Jeffrey Donovan kind of doing his snarky, like, okay, you know, like, little people, like, I'm good at reading people. And he kind of talks down to them and tells them, like, you're not going to call the police because yeah. I can tell, blah, blah, blah. And I do like the way that Bill Skarsgård gives it back to him, just being like, that's a neat trick. I'm going to do it right back to you. And, like, he also reads them pretty well. I appreciate...
And he recognizes the power he's got in the situation with the gun.
Yeah. And also, that whole scene, like... they're all very polite to each other. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, Bill's being, like, genuinely polite. Like, he keeps kind of, like, looking at Micah Monroe being like, well, her name's Jules. Like, he's, like, trying to be, like, nice and friendly. And she's, like, really pissed because she can't get over the kid in the basement. So she's, like, immediately, like, off board with these people. She thinks they're horrible, as you should.
I forget the only reason they're in the living room is because they're like, why don't we just go sit down? Why don't we sit down, have some tea, and let's talk this out?
And I like that... like, Bill keeps trying to do that. Like, he keeps trying to be like, no, okay, I'm Mickey. Like, he's, like, still trying to, like, introduce and be polite. And then he'll look at her and realize, like, oh, no, we're not being polite. Like, she's pissed.
We're all villains here. Yeah, that is a good scene. Mine, again, we also already talked about it. But, again, there's not a lot of meat on the bone of this movie, even though it is quite good, I think, quite good. But we talked about it. It is, I like the cleverness that he exhibits when she has escaped, he comes down and you think like, oh, he's going to start like beating him up, killing him, taking his fingers or something like that. Like something horrible is going to happen to Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah.
But he talks his way out of it. He comes up with a really clever, he warps the world a little bit. I know I already said it was very Burn Notice and it was like clever. I liked that he went from what should have been like his most dire situation to he's at the front door about to be let go by this guy. Like that's awesome. I thought that was really cool, and I was super bummed when it didn't work out for them.
Well, then the movie would be over.
I know.
It was a short movie.
I kind of thought it was going to enter some kind of like second act where they do get away, but they have to circle back for whatever reason, or
for the girl, they
recognize they can't really go to the police even with the girl or something like that. But no, it's just they stayed in the house, which, you know, it made it that kind of movie. It's a self-contained sort of bottle movie, which was good. Well, that is... do you have another favorite moment or scene, or should I dive into some trivia about it?
Let's dive in.
Let's dive right in. Let's do this. There isn't... another thing, there isn't... like with a lot of these new releases, there isn't a ton of trivia about this movie, but I culled together what I could. But I'll be honest, I don't think I organized it very well. According to IMDb facts, Mickey has Jules' name tattooed on his hand, but he's also got like a sort of visage of Kurt Russell's character... from Death Proof.
Oh.
Or like the name of his car or something. Like he's got a reference to Kurt Russell's character from Death Proof on his person. I didn't know this, that Bill Skarsgård and Micah Monroe are actually really good friends in real life.
Oh.
Which sort of...
I could see them being in the same circles.
Yeah, it speaks to the chemistry that they have and everything. I think that was pretty good. They really wanted to keep mentioning, like, it's a fact about this movie that he says in the beginning when he's opening the door that he's like, well, no, we're not going to, like, just break the door. We're not barbarians. And they're like, ooh. And a couple years later, he was in Barbarians. I'm like, that's not a fact.
It's not a fact.
That's just a coincidence. But it's dumb.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, Barbarians is a good movie.
Is it? I think it's just Barbarian.
Maybe. Barbarian. I don't know.
I think it's just Barbarian.
Look it up online if you don't believe me. Or if you think I'm wrong, which I probably am. I didn't know this. This script was on the 2016 like blacklist, Hollywood's famous blacklist, and it eventually got made once they got like Bill Skarsgård and Micah Monroe decided to do it. But it really got kicked into high gear when Kira Sedgwick and Jeffrey Donovan signed on board, and then it was off to the races in 2019.
Some Burn Notice fan was like, Jeffrey Donovan.
I think Kira Sedgwick was doing the heavy lifting to get it greenlit there, but yes. You mentioned the tongue ring scene. Monroe mentioned that was actually the hardest scene in the movie to film. She said she was acutely aware, and everyone was acutely aware, that this could look really fake in a big hurry. And so it was done with like a suction cup, but she said basically just finding the way to shoot it, finding the physicality to do it and all of that really like drove her. And I do wonder if there was part of it that was like, someone's going to ask me to pierce my tongue for this fucking movie, and I don't want to do it, so I have to make sure I make this suction cup work.
Yeah.
They said that was also, like, one of the moments where they broke a lot because they were just, like, so tired and, like, had the giggles about it.
Well, also, like, you have to basically, like, be acting in each other's mouths at a certain
like,
point.
Like, right so in,
that had
yeah.
to have been funny and gross.
I thought you'd like this fact. Writer-directors Dan Burke and Robert Olson were paired up freshman year at NYU, and that's how they became best friends and now creative
like,
partners.
Paired up like roommates?
Like randomly, yeah, they were roommates in their freshman year, and they just stayed good friends, and now they're making movies together.
You know what? Like, I reach out every so often to my freshman year roommate. Ari, if you're listening to this, I'd be surprised. But
it'd be so weird if she listened, but, like, didn't respond to your text.
No, Ari responds to my text.
I know, but, like, if it didn't come up, then, oh, I listened to your podcast where you mentioned it. The directors told, or spoke at South by Southwest, where the movie premiered, that they first fell in love with the idea of telling a story about a kind of outlaw couple, like in Natural Born Killers and Bonnie and Clyde and all of that. And then they kind of worked backwards from being like, okay, we've got a good idea of like what we want to do with your classic outlaw couple. But who do we want them to go up against? Like that was what they were like trying to figure out creatively. And they said they tossed around ideas of an obsessed FBI agent, a jealous ex, zombies, etc. Like a bunch of different things before they landed on what they called, quote, a bizarro world version of themselves. And I looked into that and they explained, I didn't take the exact quote of how they explained it, but basically what they said was, you've got Bill Skarsgård and Micah Monroe, and they are actually like a good couple. They're dumb, they're twisted, they are robbing their way across America so they can sell seashells down by the seashore in Florida. But everything they do together makes them better versions of each other. They both feed into each other positively. Then you look at Jeffrey Donovan and Kira Sedgwick, and they live in such a delusion that they keep enabling. They're codependent in that way. So they're just in this fantasy world of toxicity and murder and kidnapping and all of that. They make each other worse. So it's interesting that their status in life is one is the delusional people are the rich. They have money. They have a nice house, all of this stuff. And then the ones who are more grounded in reality and are the better versions of themselves are the more financially poor ones.
That's not strange, though. That's like life.
That is like I guess not strange, but it's telling. It's interesting. Yeah. It's a good. It's a good thing to have in the movie. Let's see. Jeffrey Donovan said he did the movie in large part because it offered him a chance to work with Kira Sedgwick for 5 weeks. He said he told a couple interesting stories. I'll tell. I think. One, he said the scene where they're doing dishes and they're kind of like discussing what to do, but they're also kind of dancing and like, and you can tell that they're both in this fantasy world and they both hear music and they're both like, everything's fine. We're a loving couple and we dance and we do the dishes together despite a girl and some drifters chained up in the basement. He said that they actually just started spontaneously doing that. They said the scene wasn't working and then they started doing a little dance. And there was such a moment of, like, them as actors being in sync that he said it ended up being one of his favorite parts of the movie.
Oh, nice.
Which I thought was interesting. He also talked about, I thought this was funny, he talked about working with the two directors. And they'd done a few movies before, but this was, like, there's kind of a new thing. And he said one of the hardest days on set was there was a, I don't know which scene it was, but he had 4 pages of dialogue that he just had to deliver. And he said he did it. And then one of the directors came up to him and gave him, like, 8 notes. And he was like, okay. Then he went away, and a couple minutes later, the other director came up, and he said, gave him, like, 7 notes. And then he said Kira Sedgwick came over to him and, like, sat down and was like, they just gave you 15 notes on a 4-page scene, and they have no idea they did that. And Jeffrey Donovan was like, yeah, but that's the job. And then the director said, like, yeah, well, the end of that story is that Jeffrey took all 15 notes and nailed it, which I thought was nice. Everyone had a nice little relationship together when they were doing interviews behind the scenes. And I think part of the reason for that is another bit of trivia I have here, which is that they rented a house together. All the 4 actors rented a house nearby the set, and they just lived together for, like, the 5 weeks it took to film.
Yeah.
And he said they developed kind of like a weird, like, parent-kid relationship and that kind of stuff. They'd wake up every morning and go into hair and makeup, and they were just spending a ton of time together, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Donovan mentioned that his first question when they, I swear to God, Jeffrey Donovan just did a lot of the press for this. I'm not just specifically looking at his interviews because I'm a Burn Notice fan. But he said his first question for the directors after he read the script, he got on a Skype call with them, and he said, quote, "You know you wrote something that can be funny, right?" And was relieved when they said, "Yes, yes, we do want this to have humor." And he was like, "Okay, I can do that."
What if they were like, "No, fuck you, man." Hey, fuck you, yeah. Man.
This movie, you think this is funny? This is a story about love and everything in between. And the last bit of trivia I have here is just that Micah Monroe mentioned in an interview that another challenge, in addition to the tongue scene, one of the other more challenging scenes of the movie was the initial robbery scene that opens the movie, because they were almost completely unable to see in those masks.
Yeah.
They're doing the whole scene basically blind and bumping into stuff and all of that, which I thought was interesting.
I've always wondered if that's hard when you're wearing the weird, like, Richard Nixon mask or whatever, yeah, when you're robbing, because you have no peripheral vision and you have these tiny little holes, and it's hard to breathe.
The mask isn't, like, tailored for your face, too, so it's like, yeah, there are these two little eye holes and you just gotta look where they are.
Yeah. So. Not great.
No. But that was the trivia for villains. It was, I guess, a little more than I thought. But, you know, it was good. It was an interesting kind of rundown. I think there were a lot of small details in this movie that they tried to pay attention to that really made it coalesce and come together as something that was very watchable, even though, I felt like at times we struggled to talk about it because there's not a lot to it other than that you just kind of have to watch. The story itself is pretty basic. Couple home invades the wrong couple. They're more sinister. They do various things to try to escape.
Yeah, I do think that this movie, some of the things that this movie are like drawbacks to this movie is that's no longer like a twist. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's sort of been done a few times, so it's almost like expected. Like, oh, I bet the couple that comes home is gonna be crazy, and they're gonna be like worse people and blah blah. So it's no longer like such a big
twist.
But
I guess they didn't really play it for a twist. The twist was when they find the girl chained in the basement. So before Jeffrey Donovan and Kara Sedgwick even walk on screen, you're like, oh, they're fucked.
Well, I know, but that's sort of like that's sort of what's realized. Like, that's them seeing like, oh, we've broken into the home of like people, yeah, that are worse than us. Like, sort of like Don't Breathe also has that. Sorry, spoiler for Don't Breathe. Don't Breathe also sort of has that.
No, that's the premise of Don't Breathe. That's not a spoiler. That's like, if that's in the trailer.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know that the guy is like not to be fucked with, but
yeah,
like,
if you're mad at Allie for spoiling Don't Breathe just there, you don't understand
how it gets. But
work.
It gets worse, yeah, than you think in Don't Breathe. You know, like, I mean, like that and like the other movies we mentioned earlier, it's been done enough. And I do think like Don't Breathe kind of does it a little bit better. And mm-hmm, like, you know, it's a little bit more of a twist, like having this be a blind man, like stuff like that. So I do think the movie, like, that's a problem that the movie comes up against. And the fact that it is somewhat predictable because of that.
Yeah.
And just because there's only so much you can do with that premise. It's like, okay, well, yeah, now they're kidnapped by the couple. Like, I could kind of see that happening. Now they're going to try to escape. Probably not going to be able to escape because we're only 30 minutes in. You,
yeah,
know, like, you know. So I would say that the drawbacks of the movie are that due to that plot, and also I would imagine maybe budget and things like that, they didn't have like a lot of sets. Like, they had kind of this one set and these four actors and then the little girl too, so it, you very much were like, okay, it's gonna take place in this house, it's gonna be about them trying to escape and failing to escape and then things getting worse for them. So it was a little predictable in that sense. Like,
yeah,
even the end, I wasn't like, oh my god, I can't believe Bill Skarsgård got shot. It was like, no, there was like a 50-50 shot that,
yeah,
like one of them wasn't going to survive, you know?
Yeah, and you do, like, the movie's satisfaction comes from seeing Jeffrey Donovan die, and you get that, and I think...
Although Tyler wept for, God, a good hour, just, oh, Jeffrey, no!
I didn't say...
Jeffrey, no!
I was like, Jeffrey, no! I refer to him by his character from Burn Notice, Michael Weston. No,
And then after he stopped weeping, he went on like a 2-hour rant about how Michael Weston would have gotten out of it, you know, had it been his character faced with that.
Well, yeah,
situation.
Michael Weston would have ducked in the car.
No, he wasn't. If he was having them drive up at him, and I'm saying if he was Jeffrey Donovan's character, how
oh,
he would
yeah.
have done.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. Michael Weston would have... he wouldn't have let him escape. He you know, he would have crafted a better story. No,
I shouldn't have gotten you started again.
Yeah, it would have been so easy. He would have had his buddy Sam Axe, played by the incomparable Bruce Campbell, providing backup, Chuck Finley. Don't get me started. You're right, because we'll be... You know what? I'm started.
No. So, okay.
In 2009, I'm going to have to chloroform
him. Chloroforming him.
Matt Nix had a vision. I do really like Burn Notice.
Even though I know.
It's objectively a pretty mid show.
You leave that in at your own peril.
Oh, you're right. I'm going to delete that. No one listen to this. Okay, we're dancing around it. Allie, would you recommend Villains?
I think I would, because I wouldn't say like, oh my god, your mind's gonna be blown by this movie. But if you like Micah Monroe, you like Bill Skarsgård, you are one of the handful of fans of Burn Notice that are obsessed with Jeffrey Donovan.
There's more than a handful.
No, I'm sure. It's you and all, and my grandma and all of my grandma's friends.
Your grandma likes Burn Notice?
I'm sure.
Allie heard it's a show that takes place in Florida and stereotyped all the viewers.
No, you know what? The only person that I have seen other than you watching Burn Notice, like, actively is my dad. So, like, yeah, you and, like, the Republican men who live in Florida.
All right. Moving on. It is not that kind of show.
Or if you're a big Kira Sedgwick fan.
Michael Weston would have voted blue. Thank you very much.
No, I'm saying that maybe their fans are like my father, conservative white men who like Florida.
No, he's a bleeding heart liberal.
Not my father.
No, but Michael Weston.
I know. I get it.
Have I taught you nothing in this marriage?
I'm just saying. Anyway... If you're a fan of one of the actors, or you watch Significant Other like we told you to, then you...
You're like snappy it today. Allie's angry. We gotta end this podcast.
No!
I gotta give her some chocolate or something.
I would love some chocolate. You gotta watch Significant... So here's the thing. I would 100% recommend Significant Other. I would recommend that over Villains because I think it's a better movie. However, if you watch Significant Others and you like a Significant Other... and you liked it, I would also recommend this movie. So I do think you got 90 minutes, you're looking for a fun movie.
Yeah, it doesn't demand a lot of your time.
With an interesting premise, you like this kind of premise, or you like any of the actors. And yeah, it's a solidly a dark comedy, so there are some comedic elements, but there are some fucked up elements too.
Yeah.
I would recommend it in that way. Would I be like, you're on this overlooked Oscar movie? Like, probably not.
No, but we don't deal in those movies on this podcast. Although I guess we do. We did Poor Things and
I'll say Saltburn was potentially overlooked in some awards categories.
Was it not eligible? Like, isn't Saltburn's time coming?
No, I think it was released at the time for
and got nothing.
Yeah,
we'll have to double check that, but you could be right. As for me, I think Allie hit the nail on the head in a lot of ways. This the wrong home invade, like home invaded the wrong couple or person thing is, it's a premise. It's almost like a trope at this point, like body switching, like a heist movie. These things that are such a good premise that people keep returning to them because there's still creativity to mine out of them. It's what you do with it. So it's like, okay, what is the wrong couple they home invaded? And I like this sort of idea of the bizarro version of them, and they themselves are these like high concept villain caricature kind of people. So, you know, I think it's among the best of that premise of movies that have come out for sure. And like Allie also said, it goes down easy. It's 90 minutes. Give it a watch. I think it's good. I don't think you'll be disappointed if you spend your time checking out Villains.
If you too aspire to sell seashells down by the seashore, maybe you'll also like it on that level.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, if you want to see a Florida person movie as well, before we get into plugs, Allie was very recently on the latest episode of the Socially Distanced podcast via the Pop Break, talking about the remake of Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor.
Roadhouse.
So if you want if you want to hear Allie talk about more seashells by the seashore and Florida people, please go check that out because it is very funny.
I don't mention seashells a lot, but I do mention
the seashore.
I mentioned my opinion on the new Roadhouse.
Yeah.
And the old Roadhouse.
The Roadhouse, which is itself a sea shack by the seashore.
Yeah. Although kind of
light on sea shack.
Nicer than the shack. Nicer than a shack. The new roadhouse.
Well, not when Dalton's done with it.
Yeah. Which, spoiler for Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah. Allie, more properly, we should move on to plugs. You know, where can people find you?
So, yeah, you can definitely listen to that episode. You'll hear some fun people with a lot of great opinions about movies, a couple of movies. You can also find me on Instagram and Threads. Both of those, I'm at AnalRetentive, AnalRetentive, where I post thirst traps of myself and also like comedy sketches and little fun comedy short films, kind of horror-esque short films sometimes, and some stand-up comedy. I also post those kinds of videos on my TikTok and my YouTube, which are both at Like Willie Nelson, spelled just like the singer, Like Willie Nelson, because my name is spelled a lot like Willie Nelson's name. That's something we have in common. That and we both used to smoke a lot of reefer. You can also find my writing on parade.com, where I cover entertainment, and I'll have writing up somewhere else soon, too.
Yeah, and you can find me on Threads at TylerMcCarthy328. I can't recommend our Significant Other episode enough or that movie, so you can listen to our whole back catalog and a lot of other good podcasts on the Pop Break Today feed. If you're interested in some of the stuff I'm working on, you can find me across all the NBC Universal editorial websites. And yeah, I was also shouting out another, I was on the Socially Distanced 200th episode, which came out a few weeks ago. We drafted our, fantasy Avengers team from all the, current MCU Marvel characters. It was a lot of fun. It was my first draft and it's a big milestone for the Socially Distanced podcast. So go check that out.
And also everyone tweet out or like what Instagram out a very happy birthday to this guy over here.
Aw, thank you.
Because it's his birthday. That's in a true. Few minutes.
If you're listening to this on the day it came out, yeah, we are recording this about a half hour before March 28th, which is my birthday.
That's right.
Yay.
Well, special thanks to Mallory Johns for our intro and outro music.
And Alex Marcus, our producer.